Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 180, Liberation Through Nature, Hearing, and Death.
Shall we start? Now, how many of you have read the Tibetan Book of the Dead in some version or form? First of all, the Book of the Dead is not the Book of the Dead. It's called the Book of Liberation by learning, I like to say by learning in the between. When learned, or you can even say when learned in the between. And one of my favorite things about translating, one of the reasons I accepted to retranslate it, is that I don't like calling this death, rebirth, transition period the intermediate state. I hate that. When the Tibetan word bardo means in between. So it's between, and it can fit. It's great in American culture, when you begin the between. It's a two-syllable word. And it's correct, you know, it's the between. Sure. Yeah. And people want that, so when you say intermediate state, people end up saying bardo, which is the Tibetan word. But why not use the word the between? That was one of my great joys in translating this book, was to translate it as the between. And so it's bardo tejul, and bardo means in the between. And ter means to listen, literally, or to hear. But the hearing is the word for learning, because they didn't have so many printed books in those days. So you hear something to learn it instead of reading it. So tervark really means to learn. When you say someone is very erudite, you say tervachimbo, has great learning. So it's a book of natural liberation, meaning that liberated by nature. And why? What is the nature that liberates you? This is the Buddha vision, you know, which people wrongly think Buddha's vision is that everything is suffering. But Buddha's vision actually is that everything is not suffering. That's superb. As the Dalai Lama says, if the Buddha's vision and teaching was only that there's all this inescapable suffering everywhere, for him to teach at all even would be like going, as he said, like going to a person who's life in prison and going, nya, nya. You're going to suffer, nya, nya. That would be it. The only reason he mentioned the suffering part was to inspire people to find the bliss part. In other words, in comparison with reality, which is nirvana, living in an unreal world based on delusion is suffering, right? And so what he said was not even, you know, the poor Pope, two popes ago, he wrote this book called Threshold of Hope in English. The translation was Threshold of Hope. But the chapter on non-Christian religions was written by Cardinal Ratzinger, who was then the next pope, right? The just recent one. And he wrote in there like, oh, I can't see how anybody could ever deal with Buddhism. It's so, they must be so miserable when they're just told everything is suffering. Meanwhile, he was having a jolly time in the Vatican. So he thought Christians were all happy. So that's fine. But anyway, the main point is Buddha's vision is that that the reality is bliss. It is nirvana. That's what reality is. Unreality is suffering. When you're trapped in an unreality, you suffer. Okay. So natural liberation means that if you get to nature, then you'll be liberated. You know, if you let nature happen, if you don't distort nature with some sort of concept, some sort of distorted and erroneous concept. And therefore, the most amazing thing in the Book of the Dead, for example, where it begins, really, well, there are some prayers and stuff which we could look at, but where it begins, and that's where I just want to begin with this tonight. Hey, noble one, you named so-and-so, you know, whatever the name of the departed person who's just at the point of death. Now the time has come for you to seek the way. Just as your breath stops, the objective clear light of the first between will dawn, as previously described to you by your teacher. Your outer breath stops, and you experience reality, stark and void like space. Your immaculate naked awareness dawning clear and void without horizon or center. At that instant, you yourself must recognize it as yourself. You must stay with that experience. I will describe it again to you at that moment. So this is the challenge, you know, the clear light. In other words, nature, what is the deepest nature of reality is voidness. But voidness is not nothingness. Voidness is the infinite web of relativity of all things. And it is made of, however, this, the deepest, subtlest level of that energy is called the clear light of the void, or the transparency of the void, the pravasvara. And that pravasvara, that clear light, is really not, it is a grayish transparency, you know, like a diamond. It's not a white light. There's another level in the subtle body mind that is a white light. If you, when you have an experience, for example, well, even if you were wide awake and feeling energetic and you suddenly passed out, like what you do when you normally, when you fall asleep, you would be upset. You would think you fainted, you lost consciousness, you would be very, very upset. Because the idea of your consciousness not being in what the Buddhists would call your coarse senses, looking at your ordinary environment and having a feeling of control, like recognizing you're in this room and your eyes are functioning and you're interpreting what you see with your brain and recognizing ceiling, light, floor, wall, table, people, etc. You're used to, that's where you feel like you're in control, you're in a space that you can deal with it. I mean, sometimes it's uncomfortable, but usually that's it. So when you just completely black out or you lose yourself in a vast space, you would feel freaked out, like, where am I? What am I doing here? You know, right? But at night, you do that every single night, and you do it with relief and joy. You close all the doors and windows that are in the city, you lock the door, you turn off all the lights, you quiet the sounds down, you go like this in the nice pillow, you cuddle up in the covers, and you lose consciousness happily, right? And in a way, in that unconscious state, your sense of boundary between your skin and what's outside it is disappeared. And you're just completely oblivious to what's going on around you. So you can identify with yourself in the state of sleep. You don't do it once you've already fallen asleep, but at the boundary when you know you're going to lose consciousness, you're fine with it, right? Although sometimes some people freak out, and you know, if you don't sleep for 17 to 20 days, you die. Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, and you go pretty crazy a few days before.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You do. I know one really neurotic French painter who almost, I think he made it 26 days. And they had ambulances and they were doing all this stuff trying to get him to go to sleep. And he gave him a sleeping pill. He was so freaked out. But finally, someone brought him some wine from the home country of Burgundy, and he drank that and he passed out. Luckily. Very nervous guy. He did Bell Vacheron, I still remember. Very nice, a good friend of mine. I mean, I didn't do that when I was there, but I mean, it doesn't happen to me. So what the death thing is like that, but then in the death thing, what they're encouraging and the real nature of things is not that dark space in which you fall asleep. That's called the state of immanence. That's a threshold state of a state which is a state of this gray brilliance. but a gray brilliance. That is a kind of brilliance that combines the brilliance of blackness and whiteness. So there's no shadow. Everything is self-illuminated. Everything is transparent. And it's made of light. So in a way, it's not a bright light shining on a non-bright object, like ordinary sunlight or moonlight or electric light. This is, everything is light. So it's all transparent. Something like that. It's pure light energy. It's at that threshold of where mass, the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second in materialist physics, Einsteinian physics, and because you can't go faster than that, the light particle, because mass becomes infinite at that state. And so that's the event horizon of the clear light of the void, is exactly that area, in that kind of realm, where wave particle, you can't tell, wave function, whatever it is. That's where the quantum people said you couldn't say what deep reality is. It's this deep, infinite energy of the vacuum. I don't know. Never mind. We'll get into it. But the point is, you experience that at death. And they're saying to you, recognize it like you know what it is. So, in this, when you meditate, and there are various ways of doing this. What's called Dzogchen in the Nyingma tradition, and this particular book of the dead, version of the Book of the Dead, is from the Nyingma tradition. And there they go into a thing where you meditate and you somehow let go of your sense of separation from everything around you. Your eyes are partially closed, so you just have a notion of all everything that's around you. But you feel totally interpenetrated with that thing around you as a vast space. So you kind of directly feel one with this space. And you don't feel, it's not like you're sitting there thinking, oh, here's this space around me. You don't think anything. You could, like when you don't do some vipassana, and you count your breathing, and then if you have a distracting thought, you bring it back to the breathing. Well, here, you let yourself be space, vast space. And when a thought arises, like, oh, what is this? I'm trying to imagine I'm space, that's silly, blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, you then get away from that thought, you let go of that thought, and you come back to just being space. Or there are different ways, or you can let the thought itself be space. But in a way, you ignore it. You have to ignore it as a separated thing, emanating from a separated person who's thinking about their condition. You have to stop your discursive thinking. It's very difficult to do, of course, but then at first you do it, and then you bring your mind back to just being space. If you can do that, that's a very, of course, powerful way, but usually there's all kind of preliminary steps of where you look for yourself as a set point of separation from things, really, really hard. And when you really do that, looking with your own hardest subjectivity for yourself in your hardest objectivity, for your real identity inside in its hardest objectivity, and you press the subjectivity against the heart, the objectivity, with all your might, your mental concentrating might. And when you do that, that melts the stress of that, the deep inner core mental stress of that, causes you to melt into that spacious thing. So that's the harder way to do it. But in a way, maybe more practical for most people. Because you can fool yourself into thinking, oh, I'm just space, and then not think anything. But you haven't actually excavated this subliminal feeling of being a certain separate point of existence, opposed to the whole space and the universe, like a located in the space, your subjectivity, in other words. Not that easy to suspend it, let's say. But anyway, this is the training, and for a moment, every being that dies, even the most ignorant one, even animal, even preta realm, hell realm, deity realm, any being, the death is defined as when that being withdraws, their consciousness withdraws from the coarse elements, and then goes down through the three subtle states of moonlit, sunlit, and darklit space, and then hits clear light. And when it hits clear light, the mind, body, and this at this point, the body is very, very subtle. It's just a pure, it's like a dream body, a pure energy. And the body mind goes into clear light. Everyone does that. But no unenlightened person takes time or has preparation to be able to recognize themselves as vast space. Because they only can recognize themselves as some separate thing that is in an environment with a boundary between self and the other. So then what the between is where shooting past this clear light, the ordinary being, they then crawl up the ladder of dark-lit, sunlit, moonlit, and then consciousness, and then wind, fire, water, earth, and then some kind of body they seek. Either in a womb, in an egg, in moisture, or spontaneously, they seek some kind of individual, separated embodiment. And then this process is described in the Book of the Dead. But they seek it because they're used to being like that, and they feel too insecure just being a vast. They don't know what they are, they don't identify with themselves, they're not prepared to identify with themselves as the infinite, loving, benevolent, loving in the sense that energy is loving in the sense that it has infinite energy. So whatever energy is required for satisfaction by any entity that is part of it, is available to that entity. So there can be no deprivation, there can be no lack, there can be no need, there can be no loss. Every being has plenum of energy in its very atoms, in a way. In a way, it's very scientific. You realize the whole planet Earth, this planet Earth, except for maybe some really isolated and incredibly uninformed people in some remote areas, everyone on planet Earth has had a subliminal teaching of the illusoriness of the apparently solid reality, solid material objects, by the nuclear explosions, nuclear fission. Because of the atomic bomb, actually, everybody has realized that every atom has this infinite energy inside it that can completely vaporize any kind of solidity. It's just a subliminal message to the planet Earth, actually. And that means that your own cells, and this is why you have where miracle healings come from, by the way, and where even miracles come from. That means that that energy in every so-called atom in your body, and of course there isn't really a real atom, in a sense that there's a relative level of structure you could call an atom, but by quantum people have proved that even its components are dissolved under analysis and the whole thing disappears if you keep analyzing it. So it isn't like a fixed, indivisible thing that it's the sort of bedrock of physical reality. There's no such thing. But nevertheless, you know, we feel sort of solid, like my elbows banging on the arm of the chair and so forth. But that means that the energy in my cells, if directed to release in some more friendly way than nuclear fission, which wouldn't do much good to me, but to release in some other way, there is a plenum of energy in every cell of my body to fulfill any need of any kind, to be strong enough to eliminate any alien presence or thing that was obstructing my organs or any such thing. There's this infinite energy in the body, because we are made of this clear light, which is this infinite energy. In enlightened vision, in a realistic vision, and that is enlightened vision. Unrealistic vision, you know, I have like a tumor in my arm, and it's like whatever, melanoma, and I don't know what. And then, you know, and I feel so weak and depleted and exhausted and whatever, and I just collapse. But this is just because I'm caught in that story, really, in that level of reality, which even our own scientists tell us is illusory. Because atoms are mostly empty, they're some sort of buzzing thing, not some sort of skin, a solid skin. Anyway, so it isn't really that they necessarily expect an ordinary person who hasn't trained in life to be able to recognize this. There's the mantra that is foundational in all tantra practice, for example, which is really marvelous. Actually, repeat after me. Om.
Om.
Shunyata. Jnana. Vajra. Svabhava. Atmako. Hum. That's a really great mantra. Okay, let's do it again. Om Shunyata Jnana.
Om Shunyata Jnana.
Vajra Svabhava.
Vajra Svabhava.
Atmakoham.
Om
Shunyata Jnana.
Om Shunyata Jnana.
Vajra Svabhava.
Vajra Svabhava.
Atmakoham.
Om
Shunyata Jnana. Vajra Svabhava.
Om Shunyata Jnana. Vajra Svabhava.
Atmakoham.
Atmakoham.
Om Shunyata Jnana Vajra Svabhava Atma Koham.
Om Shunyata Jnana Vajra Svabhava Atma Koham.
Om so good. That's just a good omen. But what that Shunyata, you know, is voidness, emptiness. Om is Om, right? Om means A-U-Um. The A is the body of all Buddhas, U is the mind of the speech of all Buddhas, and Um is the mind of all Buddhas. So Om celebrates the fact that we are enfolded in the body, speech, and mind of all Buddhas infinitely, forever, and have always have been, actually. So that's Om. Then Shunyata is emptiness. Jnana means intuitive knowledge, meaning the unmediated, direct, non-conceptual knowledge. So that means the intuition of emptiness. Shunyata Jnana, right? Then Vajra is this word that can mean diamond, it can mean thunderbolt, it can mean clear light, but it is what it is clear light. It's the Vajra, and it meant thunderbolt in the Vedas, but in Buddhism it means the omnipotent power of love in the universe, Vajra. Like a diamond, you know, nothing, it's harder than any other thing. So diamond is almost, it's kind of an analogy. Or a thunderbolt, it's like the powerful energy. So Om Shunyata Jnana Vajra, so that means the knowledge of emptiness, the direct knowledge of emptiness, is a Vajra, right? You got it? Mm-hmm. And then Svabhava means nature. So the nature of the diamond, of the intuition of emptiness, Atma Kuham, that is my personal nature. Atmako aham. Aham means I. And atmako means, again, like personal nature, soul nature. And svabhava means sort of more general nature. So that means that's asserting one's identification of oneself with the infinite clear light of the body of reality of all Buddhas. That is myself, in other words. And that is considered true because Buddhas have a more realistic vision than ignorant people like me. And Buddha perceives himself as one with me in that nature. And it's just my bad habit of thinking I'm something different that makes me suffer and feel depleted. Where did Buddha go? Where's mom? You know, if I'm being shrunk, you know, where's my mom? Why didn't she pay attention? Now self-proof, right? Why didn't mother come and kiss me goodnight? Right? Remember? She's so brilliant, actually, that dude. Where is he? Is he still here? There he is. There's David. And so in a way, although one is saying this mantra, to imagine, to rehearse for this moment that every being has every time they die. And actually, they say every time we fall asleep, we have this. That's why we have the Menla sleeping yoga, being one with the clear light, because that's where we lie when we sleep. We feel we're unconscious because we don't recognize that. We just say unconscious, because we don't recognize that beneath that unconsciousness, if we had a more stabilized mind and more subtle, more ability to be a subtle subjectivity, we would be consciously unconscious. And then we would realize this transparency, diamond, brilliant, transparency of clear light. Buddha changeless light, even when we slept. But there was a Lama, Nyingma Lama, head of Nyingma order actually. Minling Rinpoche.
Minling Rinpoche, yeah.
And his whole thing as the head of the Nyingma order, and he escaped in exile, lived in India, he passed away, I believe, recently.
Yeah.
And, but his whole thing was sleeping all the time. You'd go and meet him. I met him. He woke up a little bit and chatted with me. But then he was mostly sleeping.
Yeah.
When I arrived, he said, well, you might not be able to see him because he's sleeping, but you can go and sit there while he sleeps. And he's like, oh, hey, how are you doing? He was there. And then there is one of those Mahasiddhas was, slept his way to Buddhahood, actually. He got to be Buddha by sleeping. From mixing the clear light of sleep with the clear light of death, with the clear light of Buddhahood, those three clear lights. Those three opportunities of realizing clear light. Sleep, death, and Buddhahood, those are the three. Hey. So we've died infinite times, all of us, we've all been in the clear light. At first, split second, but we just rushed past it. We weren't in that moment enough that they're trying to teach here in Book of the Dead. But and I could tell you the story of the guy who slept his way to Buddhahood, but I don't want to distract him. The guy goes, well, maybe it's fun. You want to hear that story?
Yes. Yeah.
Greetings and salutations, podcast wallahs. This is podcast producer Justin Stone Diaz, and I'd like to welcome you to this episode of the Bob Thurman Podcast. In the first half of this week's episode, Bob gave us an overview of the mistitled Tibetan Book of the Dead. I really enjoyed this recording from the Tibet House Menla Retreat Program on Tibetan Medicine with Eric Rosenbusch from way back in 2014. Eric's one of Dr. Anita's main students who speaks English and works in America. Eric's a dear friend of mine. If you want to learn something about Tibetan medicine, Soa Rigpa, and especially the herbs that are used within the tradition, you definitely want to check out Eric Rosenbusch. We'll provide links in the podcast description so you can get to his website and see his online and in-person offerings. Tibetan Book of the Dead can be a little intimidating to approach and study, especially if you don't have someone in your life that's dealing with a death process or about to pass on. This recording, Bob really connects it to the wider Buddhist philosophy and the Buddhist inner sciences, from the chakras to the elements, and to practical meditation. The second half of this week's episode will include a meditation from this retreat on the eight dissolution states. Hope you'll enjoy that meditation. Now, if you want to hear the continuation of the story that we ended the first half of this week's episode with, be sure to check out the podcast extra, where the entire recording from this day's retreat will be posted. It's a great story, and it'll be worth tuning in when we post that podcast extra. This week's episode, special thanks goes to Gary Gack, our poet in residence, who has a new book coming out this week called Pause, Breathe, Smile. Awakening Mindfulness When Meditation Is Not Enough, from Sounds True. I hope you have been enjoying the new podcast poetry section now featured at the end of each week's episode, which Gary does the reading and helps curate the poetry for. If you're inspired by Gary's readings and his own poetry, please be sure to visit the podcast description. We'll have a link where you can get a copy of his books and pre-order his newest book, available through Sounds True. As always, the Bob Thurman Podcast is brought to you in part through the generous support of the Tibet House U.S. membership community and listeners like you. To learn more about the benefits of Tibet House membership, please visit tibethouse.us. Benefits include special invites to tours around the world with Robert Thurman and friends with geographic expeditions. Trips in 2019 include Sri Lanka. Geographic Expeditions with Tibet House U.S. and Robert Thurman benefit the ongoing work to present and preserve Tibetan culture. And as always, our weekly interstitial music is provided by our dear friend Tenzin Chogyal. Used with the artist's permission, all rights reserved. To learn more, please visit his website at tenzingchogyal.com. And now, back to Gary and Bob with the second half of this week's episode.
And now meditate. Now, the next thing I'm going to read, do it meditatively. Try to meditate this now. Okay, go into meditative mode. Now imagine, in meditative mode, that you lose your sense of visual consciousness. That whatever you're seeing, or even imagining as seen, is constantly eluding your ability to recognize it. Which is like, so therefore it's like a mirage or a hallucination. Which is your visual cortex desperate effort to recognize what is in your visual sensory apparatus and failing to do so, and then you lose your sense of sight. You become blinded. By your ordinary eyes become blinded. And then that is called earth melting into water, and your body, the sense of solidity of your body, feels like lost, and you feel fluid. You feel like you're melted into fluidity. And the sign, you have an inner visionary sign of a hallucination, like one of those like patterns, you know, like one of those Muslim patterns in their temples, you know, some kind of drug hallucination. It's like that. Okay, then you have this second sign is where you feel like there's billowing smoke all around you and a little bit feeling of heat and internally, and you lose your sense, and you have a roaring sound in your ears and you lose your sense of hearing. And you feel like you are a smoky space. It isn't like you're looking out of your body. Your body has become, your motor sense of motor movement has diminished, and you're feeling like almost paralyzed or something. And you can't, your visual whole operation has stopped, audio operation stops, and you feel like you're sort of in a smoke-filled place. You are a smoke-filled place. And that's earth, that's water melting into fire. And then you start cooling off. And you have an inner sign of like a lot of flickering fireflies, or like a moiré pattern of raindrops falling on a pond surface with interlacing ripples. And that is fire melting into wind. And by that time you lose all motor. You are like, it's like your whole body has gone to sleep, like some limb will go to sleep when you sit on it in an uncomfortable way. Now your whole body has gone to sleep and you have no way of moving anything. You become like paralyzed. And then your wind element finally goes and you go into pure space. You are in pure space. And the inner sign of that is there's this single candle flame, like very, very still candle flame, a light like a candle flame light is, but everything you have is feeling that that's what the universe is, that you have become that. It's not like you see that in front of you. And then from that you go into a state called luminance, of white, moonlit, empty sky. And again, you're not lying in it in a boundary body with skin and everything. you know, with the skin marking the limit of your physical being, you physically are just this white space, white lit space. That's all you are. And you kind of can be afraid at that time, and you feel you've lost something. You know, if you're not prepared for this, you could be kind of scrambling to try to feel like you had a body that was defined you versus the space that you were in. And the fact that you were pure space would be like you were losing yourself in that pure space. You'd feel very freaked out if you haven't prepared. That you say, I am the space. You know? But you don't say it at that time. You no longer maybe have an I am going, except very subliminally. But you identify with that's you. That's you. Your awareness is you. This then becomes, as your awareness expands within that space, it seems to heat up. And it turns into an orange space called radiance, a reddish orange space like a sunlit space. And then you go deeper than that, because that's kind of hot and burning, sunlight, brilliant, bright light, you know, it's a little bit dazzling. And you then, looming up is a black space, dark space, total darkness, which you move toward sort of inexorably. And you are a vast black space. And again, you don't feel you're losing yourself in the black space, you just are that black space. And at a certain point in that black space, you kind of succumb to it, and you let your consciousness go, like when you fall asleep. Then what happens is clear light, that you become conscious of that, of yourself in that black space, but it gives way to a grayish pre-dawn sky lit space of infinite transparency. And you then, in a way, expand into it, but of course you don't have a motive and a goal, because you're not an individuated thing in a way, and you're not an individuated point in it. You are the whole thing. And so then you don't really need to expand, because you're instantly infinite. And then this is pre-dawn twilight sky is the sign of imminence dissolving into clear light. So now I will read this. Now stay meditating and imagine that you've just died. And you are just this clear light space. You're going to be imagining that you're conscious of it. Actually, usually the normal person crawls right past it, because they're so desperate to reassert their sense of being something separate from everything else, that they have that so much that habit, that they don't stop and immerse themselves in this infinite energy clear light. But then you give the instruction, you say, hey, noble one, now you have arrived at so-called death. So you should conduct yourself according to your conception of the spirit of enlightenment. That means you should conceive your spirit of enlightenment thus. Alas, I have arrived at the time of death. From now, relying on this death, I will develop my spirit only by contemplating the conception of the spirit of enlightenment of love and compassion for all beings. For the sake of the whole space full of beings, I must attain perfect Buddhahood. And especially you should think, now for the sake of all beings, I will recognize the death clear light as the body of truth. That's the body of all Buddhas, the reality body of all Buddhas, you could say the reality body. Within its experience, so you identify with this infinity in a way, with this vastness. You are that, I am that. Within its experience, I will attain the supreme accomplishment of the Great Seal. And the Great Seal is like, means like a seal, like sealing wax, you make a stamp of a seal. But here, the Great Seal, or Universal Seal, is the seal of the body of truth on all seemingly differentiated things. So it's the embrace of all these things within the clear light of the void is what the Great Seal really is. And I will accomplish the purposes, the supreme accomplishment of the Great Seal, and I will accomplish the purposes of all beings. You can accomplish the purpose of all beings because you perceive yourself as being all the beings and all the environments of all the beings. And you experience that as total bliss, Because when you are embraced by the infinite clear light, you feel nothing but bliss. The only way you do it is by melting your individuated self into this great bliss, into this clear light. And therefore you can manifest and shape that infinite energy any way that beings require. So you feel another being, for example, and they are floating, and you see them as just made of the same great bliss, clear light, great bliss as you, and as an infinite world. But you see that they are writhing in pain within that, because they are trying to ward off this energy and remain intact as a separate being inside that, in some sense struggling against it, because that's how they think the reality is. And they feel the flood of energy of the Great Seal is somehow an invasion, and they're frightened of it. And therefore they tense themselves and close themselves against it. And so you can shape that energy around them in whatever way that they will perceive it as a doorway into releasing their defense and embracing this bliss reality. Whether that doorway for them is another person talking to them, whether it's a book, whether it's a picture, whether it's a planet, whether it's an animal, whether it's a tree, whether it's a continent, whether it's an ocean, whatever it is, you can shape that infinite energy into whatever will be most beneficial for them to perceive. So that's why, by attaining the supreme accomplishment of the Great Seal, I will accomplish the purposes of all beings. If I don't attain that, then in the time of the between, I will recognize it as the between. That is to say, I will between lucidly. I will lucidly do the between. Like lucidly dream, I will lucidly between. I will realize that between as the great sealed body of integration, and I will accomplish the purposes of all the infinite space full of beings by manifesting whatsoever is needed to tame whosoever. Thus, never losing the willpower of that spiritual conception, you should remember the experience of whatever instructions you have previously practiced. So this is being one with the clear light. And then it elaborates it even more thoroughly. Hey, noble one, you named, you know, put in your own name or name of anyone departed. Listen up. Now the pure, clear light of reality dawns for you. Recognize it. Hey, noble one, this your present conscious, natural, clear, void awareness, this presence in clear voidness without any objectivity of substance, sign, or color, just this is the reality, the mother, Buddha, all-around goodness. And this, so the mother, the objective side of it, is the mother, Buddha, all-around goodness. Mark really loves that one. And this, your conscious awareness, natural voidness, not succumbing to a false annihilative voidness, just your own conscious awareness, unceasing, bright, distinct, and vibrant, just this awareness, which is bliss, they don't say bliss, but because this is for the common populace, but this is a bliss awareness, is the Father, Buddha, all-around goodness. Just this presence of the indivisibility of your awareness is naturally in substantial voidness, and the vibrant, bright presence of your conscious awareness, just this is the Buddha body of truth. Your awareness thus abides in this vast mass of light of clarity, void, indivisible. You are free of birth or death. Just this is the Buddha changeless light. It is enough just to recognize this. Recognizing this as your own conscious awareness's purity, nature as the Buddha, yourself beholding your own awareness, that is to dwell in the inner realization of all Buddhas. So they don't say, but at that point, if you are prepared for that and you recognize that, you realize that you and all the Buddha's minds that ever were are all one, and you feel that you are one with all the minds of all other non-Buddha beings as well. And the Buddhas you don't worry about, because they are equally with you in the bliss perception of it. But the non-Buddha ones, you feel they are you, and yet you realize that they subjectively don't know that they are you. And so you're energy naturally flows around them, seeking a way to introduce them to being one with this clear light themselves, sort of thing.
Poem by William Stafford. You, reading this, be ready. Without commentary, because it needs none. You, reading this, be ready. Starting here, what do you want to remember? How sunlight creeps along a shining floor? What scent of old wood hovers? What softened sound from outside fills the air? Will you ever bring a better gift for the world than the breathing respect that you carry wherever you go right now? Are you waiting for time to show you some better thoughts? When you turn around, starting here, lift this new glimpse that you've found. Carry into evening all that you want from this day, this interval you spent reading or hearing this. Keep it for life. What can anyone give you greater than now? Starting here, right in this room, when you turn around. You, not your Aunt Ida in the Poconos, not the person next to you. You. You not commuting from the office to your home, not you doing the dishes or cleaning the room, you connecting with this. In other words, you, completely here and now. Be ready. You, reading this, be ready, is copyright 1998 by the estate of William Stafford. Reprinted from The Way It Is by William Stafford with permission of Gray Wolf Press, Salit Point, Minnesota. I'm Gary Gawk, and this segment is a part of the Bob Thurman podcast. It's published by Tibet House US under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Please feel free to share, redistribute, and post via your favorite online portals.